Support for this podcast comes from the Fletcher School of Global Affairs at Tufts University. To start your future as a global changemaker, you must have context across fields like international business, cybersecurity, energy policy, and more. Don't just study global affairs, shape them. Visit fletcher.tufts.edu.
Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Who wouldn't want a home in Florida? Sun and beach, warm winters, and for a while in recent years, unbelievable gains on prices that just kept going up. Now, nationally, and especially in Florida's Miami area and its southwest and stretches of Gulf Coast, the party is so over. See-through condos stand practically empty. The vultures are moving in. This hour On Point, we'll look at the heart of the Florida real estate meltdown and what it tells us about the country's housing boom and bust. You can join the conversation. Do you have a condo in South Florida you're now dying to sell? What's the market telling you? Between subprime loans and speculators, what should we learn from this bust from Florida? We're at 1-800-423-8255, 800-423-TALK. We're going to hear a lot of voices today from Florida and beyond. But joining me first from Miami is Peter Zalewski, founder of Condo Vultures, a real estate consulting firm and brokerage. Peter Zalewski, thanks for joining us.
Tom, I'm delighted to be here. Thank you.
What do you do at Condo Vultures?
I'm actually the founder and I'm the qualifying broker for a licensed Florida real estate brokerage called Condo Vultures Realty. What we do is we represent buyers. We use data to go in, analyze the most vulnerable sellers, go in there and try to take what we can at a fantastic price.
So it's just what it sounds like. You help people dump things they can't hang on to, or others find incredible buys in Florida right now?
Absolutely. What we do is we only work on the buy side, if you will, so we don't actually have any listings. So our priority and fiduciary responsibility is to that buyer and the buyer only. So we're able to go through and analyze data. And much like you would if you were going out and purchasing anything, you want to look at the data. People are going in and spending $400, $500, $1 million, and many times they're simply relying on somebody's word. We're presenting data to them. We're providing all sorts of analysis that give them an indication as to where the opportunity really is.
Okay. So we've got it. You've got a bit of an interest in this, but you also know the data. How bad is it, Peter Zalewski?
From what I'm looking at right now, we're going to be releasing a report at the end of this week. Overall, the typical price drop east of I-95 in South Florida. This is coastal areas, Miami-Dade, Broward, Palm Beach counties. Overall price drop 26% in terms of the asking price right now today. That equates to $218,000. Now, many people are fixated on the fact that condos are the ones that are overbuilt. We're actually seeing single-family houses drop down 27%, so slightly more than the condos. The average price drop down here is about $325,000 for coastal area properties.
And that dropped since when?
That's a running average. It's almost like an index, if you will. We're looking at real-time type of consumer confidence, if you will, where most of the data that's being released by the National Association of Realtors is closed sales from effectively 45 days ago. We're giving you real-time where they're looking at what happened in the past, whether it was a federal funds rate cut or any kind of other cut. They're not factoring that in. We're telling you where the market is right now today.
Now, it's not all of Florida that's in such bad shape, but where it's bad, it's very bad indeed. Take us on a little tour, Peter Zalewski. Right, you go west and southwest as well, down to what's it look like? Tell us, what do you got going there?
We've been running very hard with large private equity funds as well as hedge funds from all over the world. As far as away as Singapore to Monaco, we have quite a few Canadians who are coming in here. We have the northeastern cluster, Greenwich, Connecticut. There's a lot of people coming down from that way. So we've had an opportunity to go out and sort of analyze and assess the market. And what we're finding is today still there's a premium to be paid in South Florida when you compare it to the rest of the state of Florida. I would tell you the situation is tremendously worse in Tampa, Orlando, Pensacola, Southwest Florida. There's a certain cachet associated with being able to buy in Miami. Many of the foreign funds especially, they're all sort of focused on trying to pick up a piece and add it to their portfolio in Miami. When you take them to the rest of the state, that's really where they see the great value. And one of the reasons Miami hasn't really fallen to the extent of Orlando and Tampa as of yet is simply most of our new product is not coming online for, say, the next 3 to 6, possibly 9 months.
So do you have a lot of that new product sitting around? I'm looking here at a story in the Palm Beach Post. Angie Cifarelli of New Jersey, she went down and got a condo at Residences at Midtown in Palm Beach Gardens. Purchase price $404,000. Put down $80,000 deposit. Last month, appraised value, not $400,000, $200,000. She can't get a mortgage. She's in trouble. Is that a common story?
It's a common story. If you are an all-cash buyer in this market, it's absolutely spectacular because what we're seeing is we're seeing a lot of lenders. They don't want to call it blacklisting. I call it blacklisting, where they will not touch a building because of the fear of a high foreclosure rate and or the fact that many of these units are going to be occupied by renters. We've taken these lists that the lenders are putting out, and we're effectively focusing strictly on that because we know buyers going in there are not going to be able to get financing. So the seller effectively can only sell to an all-cash buyer, and if you're the only game in town, you'd be amazed how they negotiate with you.
What's a see-through condo?
In terms of...
just what is it?
Well, I can't say I've heard see-through condo before. I know a flow-through. I don't know if we're referring to the same thing. A flow-through is when you have a view of both sides, whether it's north, south, and east, west, where you typically have a balcony on both sides of the building. And that's really the latest craze down here right now.
The see-through I'm looking at here is condos that are the whole, well, basically the whole building's empty. And you can see through because you got no curtains up and nobody's living there.
Oh, absolutely. There's quite a bit of that. What I love to tell buyers to do is on a Sunday, about 8 o'clock or so, and Miami's a party town, but Sunday at 8 o'clock, if you get on I-95, which runs north-south along the coast, and you just drive, 20 miles or so north to south or whatever you want to do, and you look at all the buildings, you'll see more darkness than you will lights. It's really quite the sight to see right now.
Is this market at its bottom yet? When do you think that might come?
Well, what's kind of interesting is if you go into a mature market such as South Beach, many people around the world know South Beach.
Yep.
They know Miami Beach. That market, what we're looking at right now today, and all the product in South Beach has already been delivered, their typical price drop is about 24%. When we look at Miami, which is over on the mainland, Miami Beach is on a barrier island. In the middle is a bay. And when you get onto the mainland is the city of Miami, where the bulk of the new construction is going on. And again, much of it will not be delivered for the next six, 9 months. There are already at a 28% price drop. So you have to envision once that new product comes online, the prices are going to plummet even more. Where if you go to a place like Miami Beach where there's sand, where second home buyers can go there and feel comfortable, they're willing to pay what you need to pay right now to be in Miami Beach. They're not necessarily willing to go into the city of Miami. And that's really sort of where the rub is. That's why I think Miami still has a way to go. Miami Beach, I'm fairly confident, is fairly close to the bottom simply because there's a lack of oversupply.
Peter Zalewski, what's your takeaway? Bottom line, you know, what happened? Is this just the old Florida story of boom and bust? It's happened many times before, or was this something particular to the early 2000s, the late 90s, you name it? I mean, what is the lesson out of what has just happened to the Florida real estate market, at least the part that's just gone crazy south?
Sure. What I would tell you, and a lot of people tend to overlook this, I've been on the ground here in Miami, originally from Chicago. I've been on the ground in Miami since 1993 at the end of the Resolution Trust Corporation days when the federal government was basically selling off portfolios at heavy discounts. What I'll tell you, what we saw in the year 2000, the U.S. Census Bureau came out with data that indicated that Miami was the poorest big city in the United States. As a result of that, there was a change in the mayoral administration, and what we saw is we saw a real estate attorney elected in as mayor. We saw city commissioners who were developers. We saw developers, I should say, elected in as city commissioners. And what they really did is they said, listen, we have a jewel in Miami Beach, and it's getting all the attention, all the play, but Miami Beach is taking limits to stop new construction. We're over on the other side of the bay, and we don't have anything going on. We're the poorest big city, and because there's no state income tax or city income tax, the only way we're able to collect revenue, if you will, to operate our city is through property taxes. So they made a concerted effort to allow anybody and everybody to come in here and build, and they gave them the opportunity to build an essential business district that, for the most part, was undeveloped. So from a developer perspective, and then you throw in cheap money, and suddenly it was sort of the perfect mix, and that's sort of of what got us to where we are today. And then you throw some speculators in and some fantastic condo parties with beautiful people and fantastic liquor and hors d'oeuvres. And next thing you know, you have what we have today.
Wake up with a huge hangover. Peter Zalewski at Condo Vultures. Please stand by. I want to go to Gainesville, Florida. And Wayne Archer, he's executive director of the Bergstrom Center for Real Estate Studies at the University of Florida. Been watching Florida real estate since the early 70s. Wayne Archer, thanks very much for being here.
Thank you for inviting me.
You're quoted in December, just a couple of months ago, saying Florida is the epicenter of all things wrong with the housing industry. What do you mean?
Actually, I don't think I'm the one who said that. But
University of Florida News, December 6, 2007, Wayne Archer. Anyway.
How soon we forget. Actually, what is wrong? There are several things. I've been looking recently at the really tough counties that are suffering right now. Lee County, which is down in the southwest part of the state. St. Lucie County, just above West Palm Beach in the area that Peter is, I think, working in. And Osceola County, which is sort of a blue-collar bedroom area in Orlando. And those areas are seeing incredible foreclosures taking place right now. I think Lee County is the foreclosure capital of the United States at the moment.
Ouch!
And there are a number of things have come together in a kind of a perfect storm there. The high growth. The desperation of people to get homes when they really couldn't afford them, and the subprime lending meltdown, the loss of controls in lending, and they all came together in those three counties. It looks like to create an environment where things were just born to die. And so now we're seeing it happen. The subprime loans that people can't maintain, the stop in construction, the loss of construction jobs, it all seems to roll into a picture of real distress in those areas.
We're going to come back and look at that. If you would stand by for just a moment, Wayne Archer at the University of Florida and Peter Zalewski at Condo Vultures, see what we can learn from Florida. Maybe you'll tell us about some deals and who's buying down there, Peter, but also for national policy and where we've all just been, what can we learn from Florida? Listeners, you can join us, 800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Wayne Archer, it's not the first time that Florida's had real estate booms and busts. And as you point out, it's not the whole state that's in this deep trench right now, but enough of it. Thousands and thousands and thousands of foreclosures. Was it different this time? What did the lending spiral out of control to a different degree in a different way than the busts we've seen in the past, Wayne?
Absolutely. We had a combination of things, as always, in this, but perhaps the new element was the amazing disintegration of financial controls for mortgage lending. We had built, coming into the through the 90s, we had built sort of the world's greatest mortgage lending system. And it was working brilliantly well, people were able to get homes at more efficiently and faster on better terms than the world had ever seen. And this is sort of the Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac environment, mm-hmm. what we now call prime loans. Now, a lot of people were left out of that system, so there were problems with it. But then we began to see the introduction of a system that basically did an in run around the Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac process, as I think of it. Private mortgage brokers, private lenders feeding loans into private conduits, and those conduits securitizing loans and putting them into extremely complex securities, the whole CDO story. And those then were being purchased by naive investors or hedge funds that figured they could get out of the game before it collapsed, and everybody was betting on the fact that low interest rates were driving housing prices at a high rate of appreciation. So all these things came together. and the housing finance simply got out of control. Everybody thought housing prices would bail them out, and so they quit watching the controls. And in that process, mm-hmm. it brought a lot of people into homes that really weren't capable of making the payments on them. Some were fraudulent, of course, but many, I think, was somewhat fairly innocent. And so now we have an enormous number of loans out there that should never have been made, and they're shaky.
Peter Zalewski, you were a financial journalist for a long time before you got into the consultancy and brokerage business. Did you see this coming? Did you see it happening as it unfolded? The controls falling away, interest rates down, loans going to anybody, everybody, no documentation, all the rest. Did you see that coming, Peter?
I did. If you go back and you look at the statistics, you'll see that Miami-Dade County hit its peak, its pinnacle, in November of 2005. In June of 2005, I was working on an investigative piece where I went through and I analyzed construction loans on new condos that were coastal in Miami-Dade, Broward, Palm Beach counties. And at that time, what I came to realize in going through these mortgages, these construction loans that were recorded with each county, only 3% of the financing for these towers was coming from a Florida-based institution. So I went to the lenders and I asked the lenders who I had good relationships with, I said, why is only 3% of this $10 billion in construction condo financing coming from Florida? And they said, well, there's really two explanations. First explanation is Florida lenders are not large enough in order to take the lead role in one of these construction loans. But they said, second of all, really what was going on is early on, we would do what's called a pre-development loan. We would provide the financing so a developer who purchased a piece of property could open up a sales center and do marketing and start to sell this thing. Early on, they would have the option to buy a piece once a construction loan was put in place. Later on, by June of 2005, all the local lenders were out. And when they told me in June of 2005 they were out, I began the process of trying to put this thing together because I knew it was all going to collapse, much because of what we've seen in Florida before. It's all boom and bust. And if the locals are out of the game, more likely than not, the out-of-towners are going to get stuck with the bill.
Let's get another perspective here from Mike Larson. He joins us from Jupiter, Florida. He's a real estate analyst for Weiss Research. They track real estate markets nationwide. Mike, thanks very much for being with us today.
Glad to be here.
How do you put the Florida story into the national picture? I mean, we've got woe all over the place. You can look in California. You can look in Detroit. You can look almost every place today. But the numbers in Florida have been among the worst. How do you put the Florida's story into the midst of what we're all in the middle of in this country now on housing?
Sure. Well, Florida is definitely one of the hardest hit locations. Many cities in Florida are reporting some of the largest year-over-year declines in price and sales activity. You really have two types of markets that are suffering right now. First off is places like Florida, California, Arizona, Nevada, mm-hmm. markets where there was a lot of speculation, a lot of overbuilding, a lot of higher risk financing and so on. So when you look at a breakdown, say, of the S&P Case-Shiller home price figures, you see that the largest decline being reported is Miami at 17.5% year-over-year in terms of prices. But you also see places like Phoenix down a little over 15%, San Diego down about 15%, and so on and so forth. I think clearly, again, it's the high speculation markets, and then it's also you have the second group of markets, such as Detroit, where you have a traditional economic downturn that's causing housing problems. The auto sector's problems and problems with employment, these areas never had the boom, but unfortunately they're getting swept up in the bust due to the broader economic recession or near recession that we're dealing with now.
Mike, there's a lot of pain here, pain for individual families. You've got foreclosures, you've got lost homes, you've got dreams dashed here, but you've also got a kind of spreading crisis out of this now from Florida nationally, the housing problem and credit problem spreading into other parts of the economy, even around the world. Who should pay the piper? Or is it just going to be paid by people who lose their homes, lose the value they thought they had, Mike?
Well, clearly, on your first question, we are seeing what I would almost dub a private housing recession starting to spread into other markets, potentially including commercial real estate. If you look at the latest construction spending figures, for example, we're starting to see non-residential spending slow a little bit, and the question legitimately being raised is, are we going to see a downturn there as well? Probably not as severe as in residential, but a downturn nonetheless. And then as far as how people are going to suffer, unfortunately, the reality of the situation is that with a lot of this high-risk debt out there, with a lot of borrowers upside down on their homes, almost nothing can prevent a spike in foreclosures, a rise in delinquencies, a rise in banking sector losses. What's being done are various attempts to mitigate the damage, to ease the pain, so to speak, some of these adjustable rate mortgage reset freezes that have been talked about,
yeah.
Foreclosure moratoriums. Again, there's no magic bullet that can fix this problem, but these are designed to sort of make it a little bit more palatable for some homeowners.
With all the speculation that clearly went on in this market, and not least in Florida, is it fair to come in and offer that kind of palliative, that kind of relief? I mean, a lot of people, you know, were in the flipping business. That's a business of risk.
Well, absolutely. I mean, if you look at it purely from a fairness perspective, I mean, there is a very good argument to be made that, unfortunately, some people made this bet, now they have to lie in it. But the reality is, for this country and for the lending industry as a whole, if nothing is done, if we just take a complete hands-off, laissez-faire attitude, the consequences could be severe for the broader economy. You already see lenders that are suffering large losses on mortgages and mortgage-related securities. They're cutting back on not just residential mortgage lending, they're cutting back on commercial lending, they're cutting back on commercial real estate lending, and so you get the spreading impact that if nothing's done, the real risk is that this recession or near recession could deepen quite a bit.
Let's hear from our listeners. Anthony's calling from Framingham, Massachusetts. Anthony, you're on the air.
Yes. Hi, Tom. Thank you for taking my call.
Yeah.
I believe it was Mike Zalewski who started to say there were some bright spots in Florida. Your last guest comes from Jupiter. I own a home on Marco Island.
Okay.
And Jupiter is, I believe, one of those places in Florida that really is insulated from all that's going on around. But there are other places in Florida as well. And I'm wondering if your guests can comment on, other than Marco Island, Jupiter, Palm Beach, Amelia Island, why is that?
Why are some places holding up?
Yes.
I mean, I'm looking at it.
And actually increasing.
Let us look at it, Anthony, and I hope you're right. Wayne Archer, I'm not sure. I'm looking at a list here. Shows Marco Island. This is January numbers. Condo prices down, it looks to me like 18% year over year. That doesn't look so great. But what about Anthony's call, places that are holding up? Do you see them? Where are they?
I'm not sure prices are increasing very much any place at this time, but there is a huge difference in the overall picture. The little cities of the northern part of the state, such as Gainesville, where I am, foreclosures are an insignificant issue here.
Mm-hmm.
Same in Tallahassee. They're not so bad in Jacksonville area. So we do have a general difference across the state. Nobody escapes completely, and prices are sliding or flat. Generally everywhere, though you know, it depends, again, on the type of property and the locality within the community, too. It's the high-growth areas of Central and South Florida, particularly Southwest, of course, and Southeast, where we really see the big problems. So yes, there is a lot of variation. Another point that I might toss in here someplace, there's variation across types of real estate, too. We run a quarterly survey, which we ask about 300 experts around the state to tell us what's happening with rental property, commercial property, and so forth. And the feedback we're getting, we just got our results back yesterday from our latest survey, and they're almost defiant in saying things aren't so bad.
In the commercial side, not the,
right.
the housing
that's
side.
Right. Mm. That's right. They
Anthony,
acknowledge problems with housing.
Mm. Anthony, the hope for you may be, it shows prices down here in January, but sales doubled over a year earlier, up 100+% in Marco Island. Let's take another call, this one from Englewood, Florida. Byron, you're on the air.
Good morning, Tom, and hello, Peter. I can't even pin down one topic. You're hitting so many things, but I want to remind everyone of what I was taught by my grandparents and parents, that if you can't afford it or anything worthwhile is well worth waiting for. And I think what has happened in the real estate situation is the immediate gratification and the hopes of flipping properties and everything. And I am now in Englewood witnessing house after house just just every day I go down a block and there's a new either for rent sign or for sale sign up. I also see deterioration of houses right next door to beautifully maintained $500,000 properties.
Yeah, that hurts. That's not fun to see.
And I, in the front page of our local Englewood Sun-Herald, the great big picture of a tiny little terrier dropped off at the shelter because its family went through foreclosure. And it's always not just the pets, but the children that are forced to move. I don't think anyone realizes, the adults don't realize, what a permanent effect this has on a young child. How
tossed out of their home, tossed out of the family house.
That's right.
Yeah.
Byron,
you make it very real, and you sort of put us on that street where people feel that pain, and we appreciate that. I thank you for that call. Let me get one more from Florida right now. Naples, Florida. Rob is calling. Rob, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi, Tom.
Hi.
How are you?
Very well. What do you see, Rob?
Good. Yeah, I've been listening. I'm a real estate broker here in Naples, and the nice properties that are on the water or on the bay, they are not selling for fire sale prices. They are holding up very well. The people, basically, because, you know, they are quite nice properties, and the owners who own them, you know, either have a very low mortgage or maybe have not had a mortgage at all, and they don't need to sell. So, and people all over the country know if you can get a nice piece of property in Naples, Florida, at a reasonable price, it's a good buy.
So does it drive you crazy then, Rob, in the business when Peter Zalewski is out there with condo vultures and the message that sends?
Well, that's over in the Miami area. I'm just saying, you know, we all know in real estate is local in nature. And, you know, the nicer properties are not, you know, they're not giving them away.
Peter, what do you say? From Rob's vantage, nice place on the beach in Naples. Prices are doing fine. Thank you. What do you see, Peter?
Well, I think that's absolutely correct. We're seeing it over here in the Miami Beach area as well. What I would tell you is the good quality property is going to move at a discount. It's not going to move at a price that keeps appreciating. It'll move at a discount. Many buyers are saying, hey, I'd rather go in today, maybe pay a little bit two more and secure that ultimate luxury property that I've always wanted because I'm taking a collector's item type of approach. The other serious vultures who are going in the market, they're going in the hammer just on price. They're buying strictly on price, and when the market turns, if it does turn, their play would be to simply liquidate. The type of buyers Rob's referring to, that's the person who's going to have it 10, 20 years. They're going to pass it on to their kids. They're going to do whatever they do. But I want to point out one thing that I think a lot of people are failing to realize. If you remember before this real estate market crashed, at least, call it whatever you want, before it got into the situation it is, there was a lot of discussion about affordable housing. What are we going to do for our teachers? What are we going to do for our police officers? What are we going to do for all these people who do regular jobs? They do sound jobs. They're heroes in the community. They can't afford to live anywhere. What we're trying to do is we're trying to help that working class person get into a situation where they can live a South Florida or an American dream, and the reason they weren't able to do it is because it was greedy speculators who were taking money out of their homes in the form of equity lines, and they were putting down deposits across the board, no intention ever to live in any of these units. Simply, they wanted to flip the contract for $50,000 to $150,000 each. It's not much different than what you're seeing with the speculation on oil prices right now. People are going in there, they see an opportunity of vulnerability, and so all they're doing is flipping product, trying to make and not necessarily dealing with the repercussions. So,
Mike Larson, if I may, Peter, I've just got Mike for another second here. I want to just put the question to you, Mike, if I could. Mm-hmm. How long, how deep, how far? You say you've got about 5 years worth of homes for sale in Florida right now compared to 10 months nationally. That's a serious glut. Do you see a bottom out there? What do you see jump-starting demand again?
Well, again, it depends on market to market and property type to property type, but there is quite a large overhang of inventory that we do need to work through. The builders are cutting back pretty aggressively on starts, so so there's less new construction coming into the pipeline than we've had for some time. At the same time, you do have a lot of speculators that own property that's not cash flowing and that they, you know, really can't afford to hang on to for the long term, especially with some of these shorter-term debt instruments that they took out. So as that inventory comes on, it's got to be burned off by real demand from people just taking out traditional mortgages to put a roof
and
over.
And that could take some time. Mike Larson at Weiss Research in Jupiter, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back with more on Florida real estate. Right now we've got Earl calling from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Earl, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I was just wondering, I'm one of the people who stayed out of the housing market because I thought the houses were overvalued. And I'm wondering, do bailouts hurt people like me? I didn't take the chance to make the big payoff by flipping a house. And I'm wondering if, as I said,
yeah. So are you paying now for other people's fun times at the racetrack?
Exactly.
Well, let us pick it up. Wayne Archer, I mean, the so-called bailouts are not that generous and not that big. On the other hand, you know, there's been all kind of consideration for big financial institutions trying to help them move through here. And there are some programs now for people in trouble with their house. Do other citizens, does Earl in Pittsburgh unfairly pay the price for some, you know, speculators' fun in Florida or anywhere else?
Well, it depends on how this works out. It is a great concern, and of course, the administration is very reluctant to engage in bailouts. And it sounds like the Fed may be a little more amenable to exploring some kind of mitigation options. What if they'll be? I think we're all eager to find out. But this could go either way, I think, for Earl. One the big problem that is exacerbating everything right now is the disruption of mortgage financing. For example, the falling prices that Peter talked about in Miami right now with single family. That's probably because jumbo loans, that is loans that are larger than Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac will purchase, larger than $417,000.
Yeah.
Are very difficult to come by now because they're going to go into the private market, which has been completely disrupted. And so if, for example, Fannie and Freddie, as we, I think, are seeing, if they're going to be able to finance up to, say, $700,000 plus, that's going to make financing available to a lot of homes. That'll make the markets begin to operate. If we get the financing going again, it'll enable Earl and other people who are potential buyers to finance purchases.
On the other hand, the crunch in the meantime hurts potential buyers like that.
Oh yes, right now until that's solved, we've got a serious problem there. I don't think we'll ever get the subprime going again for some time. There's a legitimate area for subprime, but it just got out of control. Right now it's a problem. On the other hand, as the bad side and good side is, as prices adjust down, I don't know if they are in Pittsburgh, because this is pretty local in its character. But as prices go down, that's going to help Earl.
Let's get
so if we can get decent financing and prices trending down, maybe he wins.
Let's go to Tidewater, Virginia. And Jay, hi, Jay, you're on the air.
Thank you for taking my call.
Yeah.
Tidewater, Virginia is the cities of Virginia Beach, Norfolk, Chesapeake, Hampton, and Williamsburg. And we've had a ton of building down here of condos and single-family homes that start from the low 260s. And these houses are on lots that the backyard is no bigger than a parking space. But that's not my question. In a couple of these cities, Virginia Beach and Norfolk, the city itself has made sweetheart deals with developers to come in. And one example is the Granby Tower. Which it was supposed to go up, but to my understanding, now the money has dried up, as with the condo project in South Norfolk. So my question to the panel is, in Florida, did some of these cities make sweetheart deals with these developers to come in, and who ends up holding the bag when the deal goes bad? And I'll take the response off the air.
Jay, thanks very much for your call. To look at that, let's go to Tampa, Florida, and our friend Susan McManus. She's professor of government and international affairs at the University of South Florida. Susan, thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
You hear the question out of Virginia, another area where our caller Jay is with a lot of development. He wonders, you know, what's the impact, I'm hearing there, on local revenues and tax revenues, but also were there sweetheart deals? Were local governments kind of encouraging the very wave that now comes back to put things underwater?
Not as much as one might expect, because there's been sort of a growing anti-growth movement in Florida for quite a few years now. And local politicians know that they tend to get defeated as incumbents if they're too cozy with developers. So we haven't seen as much of that problem. But what the fear is, of course, is that the rising costs of homes have meant that a lot of local governments have had trouble attracting people to work there, you know, service workers and public safety employees. That's been a real problem.
And Susan, when you look out more broadly now at Florida's population facing this housing bust, how do you see that the impacts? People coming, going, staying, fearing? What do you see?
Well, obviously, we're a state that's had a great run with high growth for at least the last 8 or 9 years. I think we've led the country in job creation for 8 or 9 years, and now there's a worry that that trend is starting to go south, and that's very troubling because we're a state that's very driven by tourism. It's a big portion of our sector, and that we also know that when people vacation here, they tend to possibly buy homes here. So we've seen a really terrible situation with our construction industry at the moment. That's where we've seen a lot of layoffs and people out of work.
That's a tough picture. Let's get a call from Washington, D.C. Kevin, you're on the air from Washington.
Hi, gentlemen.
Hi.
Two quick comments, picking up on earlier comments. One is, I really think regulatory intervention is key here because of such a large problem we have.
What kind of intervention, Kevin?
Well, I really think the regulators need to be forced to give immediate mitigating relief to lenders. Otherwise, you're going to have this snowballing crash with all these people who've taken out these risky loans. And that includes both home equity lines and the credit cards. Everyone's getting hit from the credit issue on every front.
But do you mean relief to the lenders, to the banks and financial institutions, or to the borrowers?
Ultimately, it needs to be relief to the borrowers, but they're clearly not doing enough on their own. They're scraping as much money as they can out of these customers, and I think it's bordering on immoral. Second point I want to make is that we need to start retraining our culture and having a better attitude about borrowing money. Financing projects is a good thing in economics, but when you take it too far and people can't afford their homes, then everything falls apart. So until the culture understands that you cannot have these $20,000, $30,000 credit card limits, home equity lines, and homes you can't afford, we're going to have a long-term problem ahead of us.
Kevin, thanks very much for your call. Wayne Archer, Kevin's watching from Washington, D.C. and thinking, well, we do need regulatory intervention. There's a chance of this real estate bust in Florida and everywhere else spiraling on into the heart of the U.S. economy, maybe the global economy. What's your thought, Wayne?
Well, I wish I were a good enough prophet to know the answer. I think we're all concerned about that. I do take some heart in the fact that as we look around Florida, there's a lot of Florida that's still doing okay, and a lot of real estate, as I mentioned earlier, that's still doing okay. So I'm hopeful that if we can solve if the bank system can be restabilized, mm-hmm. And we get mortgage lending operating decently again, that we can survive the rest and begin to move forward.
Tom,
Peter,
if I could add to that?
Yeah.
Yeah, this is Peter down in Miami. One of the things that we're starting to see is a lot of the large lenders, the IndyMacs of the world out of California, that are just basically saying, we don't know what's going on in Florida. We don't want to know what's going on in Florida. We're not going to lend in Florida when it comes to condos. So you might be in Naples. You might be in a part of Florida that's doing very well. But because of all of the publicity and because of what's going on in Miami, there will be repercussions. There will be a wake that's going to be felt in the rest of the state of Florida. And that's ultimately, I think, where some of the attention should be focused on, hey, how do you sort of isolate this disease, this problem that we have down here in Miami and other markets, and ensure that the other markets don't have to bear the brunt of the problem.
Peter, if those lenders don't want to be active there now, is that why in your business, Condo Vultures, you're looking with cash customers? And if you have to depend on cash customers, I mean, how many of those can there be that can just plunk down $500,000 or $3 million. Isn't that a pretty severe cap on the comeback of this market?
Well, consider this. If you are buying with U.S. dollars, you are at a significant disadvantage. We have Europeans, we have Canadians who are close to par with the U.S. dollar who are feeling overly optimistic about what's going on. Many of them seem to think that with the change in the presidential administration, regardless of what party is elected, you're going to see a strengthening the U.S. dollar. Let's get out of our foreign currency. Let's get into dollars right now. We have an arbitrage play. And at the same time, if we can pick up a good quality Florida property, and we're in it 5 to 7 years anyways, let's go in right now because we know we sort of have the American money, the U.S. money at a significant disadvantage.
So for people who are coming in from outside, whether it's another state or from outside the country, where are they looking for their best bargains in Florida right now, Peter?
First and foremost, I would tell you the best hedge, at least from what we see in a market like this, is going to be sand. Anything you have that's on the sand with a view of the ocean is going to be first and foremost. Any kind of water after that will be extremely attractive. The stuff that's in the middle of a typical suburban community where there's an Applebee's on the corner and a gas station, that type of stuff, nobody has any interest unless you're a large bulk buyer looking to buy the entire complex. So for the most part, it's water. Anywhere where there's water, there's a tremendous demand, and those buyers tend to be all cash.
But are those people going to come in, put that cash down, and see themselves lose another third of it over the next year, 18 months?
Well, but what their outlook is that, you know, I want this product. I was not able to buy that product during the run-up. I mean, we had situations down here where if it was a good quality product, you would have to submit an offer. If that offer was accepted, the realtor would open the door and show you the unit, the mansion, whatever it was. Now it's at a situation where they can go in there and they can pick and choose and they can get a discount where before they had to pay more than list price just to be able to try to secure it. So there's been a significant change in psychology, and a lot of these buyers are, you know, they're saying, we don't have to get greedy here. It's kind of like right after the holidays. Right after the holidays, everything is discounted 20% to 30%. And what moves first? The good quality stuff that's great value that has staying power regardless of what's going on. As you go deeper after the holidays, what you're going to see is 60, 70, 80% discounts. And that's the double XL sweater with the plaid, if you will. Right now, the stuff that's moving is right after the holiday stuff.
Let's go for one more call to Fort Myers, Florida. Bert, you're on the air.
Yes, thank you for having me this morning. My name is Bert. This has been a great conversation, certainly a topic of discussion. I'm going to add one thing to this, and the word is greed. And I had not heard that word in a different format, but, you know, part of the issues, and I know here, for instance, where I live in Lee County, the property has gone down 15-20%. I paid my house in cash, and when you were just mentioning a few minutes ago, how many of these people do we have? Well, I'm one of them, and I can tell you, that it amazes me that we in this country allow such a crisis to really to have happened. This is unbelievable. But all I can tell you is this. I feel very sorry for those people, at least in Lusky Creek where I live, older people, to move out and sell that because they just can't afford it anymore.
Yeah, Bert, we appreciate your call. Bert, when did you buy your property in cash? How long ago?
This was exactly 2.5 years ago.
Well, okay, so price is still pretty high.
$30,000, yes.
But you, so you've taken a bit of that hit, but you're glad at least you're not underwater. You don't have a loan that's behind the value of your property.
Well, yes, that is true.
Susan McManus, Bert's expressing sympathy there for people who are just stuck and stranded by what's happened here. I mean, the impact on individual lives, never mind whole communities, very real.
Absolutely. And our legislature, ironically, goes into session today, and there's a lot of pressure on them in an election year to do something about this because people are suffering at all levels. And for the last year or so, the polls have all been showing that the primary concerns on the part of people have been the rising property taxes and homeowners insurance. And now you put on that an additional problem, which is the mortgage issue, and you have a very politically volatile situation in a key swing state.
But what can a state legislature do about it?
That's a big question, but they've got to do something. We just did pass a property tax relief amendment, which people had projected wouldn't pass until you go to the polls and you have a choice of voting for some relief or nothing, and obviously it passed. They're really struggling with it because not only are people starting to think about leaving our state, but we've had a problem with insurers leaving as well.
Yeah, that's quite the combination. Well, it's been fascinating to get a glimpse of what's going on in Florida, where things are tough. You're not alone, though, in what's going on there, and it sounds like there may be the beginnings of a comeback, but this story certainly isn't over yet. Susan McManus at the University of South Florida, it's always good to talk with you. Thank you very much for being with us today.
I enjoyed it. Thank you.
And Wayne Archer, Executive Director of the Bergstrom Center for Real Estate Studies at the University of Florida. Mr. Archer, thank you very much for joining us from Gainesville.
Pleasure to be here.
And Peter Zalewski in Miami at Condo Vultures. I'm not sure what to wish you, Peter, but I hope some people end up with homes and with sales.
Well, one of the things you should know, Tom, is that we're actually bringing people back into the market quicker than they would have otherwise.
Well, we're glad you're there for that. I'm sure some sellers are as well. Thanks very much for being with us today.
Thank you. It was delightful.
Peter Zalewski with Condo Vultures. A program note, and looking back here with listeners who were with us on Friday, in our second hour on Friday, you may recall we talked with an author. Thought her name was Margaret B. Jones. Her new memoir was Love and Consequences. It was about life in South Central Los Angeles, growing up half white, half Native American, running with gangs there, selling drugs for the Bloods. Well, it comes out today, the whole thing was a fraud. Her real name is Margaret Seltzer. She's all white. She grew up in well-to-do Sherman Oaks, a section of Los Angeles in the San Fernando Valley, Valley Girl. Story, a complete fraud, the publisher now says. We're learning this along with everybody else. It is embarrassing. It is frustrating. It's kind of infuriating. Don't know what to make of the memoir business in this country. We saw, you know, a Holocaust memoir by Misha De Fonseca that came out bogus very recently. And of course, there was Oprah and James Fry with A Million Little Pieces just a couple of years ago. But on this day, Riverhead Books, Wing of Penguin, says, Love and Consequences, a fraud. It's not for real. We're sorry about that. And I have to go back and think about how we look at memoirs, what we do with them, and how we bring them to you. Be a little warier in the future, and trust you will too. On Point can be downloaded at our website, the podcast, onpointradio.org. We thank you for joining us today and every day. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
On Point is a production of WBUR Boston and NPR, National Public Radio.